Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Dusty Baker met with the media earlier this morning, and he talked about something we talked about earlier, finding a new leadoff guy.
Springer's an unusual leadoff man. I mean, that's for sure. It's going to be hard to replace his power in that spot. But, you know, we're looking for guys that are going to get on base. You know, hopefully that's number one because you got to put the pitcher in the stretch. And hopefully somebody that can has a threat to steal to have the rest of the guys hitting behind him, you know, get more fastballs. So I've thought about that ever since we lost Springer. And, you know, we got a few candidates. Some like the bat leadoff, some don't. So it's going to be kind of a experiment, you know, in spring training and possibly, you know, as the season goes on, you know, even make a couple other moves if necessary.
All right. So, Seth, go ahead and make your recommendation to Dusty Baker that you made earlier in the show. I like this recommendation to Dusty Baker. Go for it.
Oh, it's Kyle Tucker.
Yes.
Would Kyle be the simple
Tucker.
One, right?
Kyle
yeah.
Tucker, baby.
Kyle Tucker, who can hit for power, yep. Who has added some muscle, apparently. He looks a little bit beefier. He's got the experience. He had the promise he showed last year. The only thing I worry about with Kyle Tucker is he up to the pressure the same way George Springer was up to the pressure? Will he embrace the challenge the same? Look, I know I don't have the stats in front of me. I'm pretty sure George Springer hit a leadoff home run. First at bat of the game, was it 78% of the time?
It
was almost
it
every.
Like.
Yeah, it was pretty much. It was every single time that I couldn't get home on time
right.
to watch the game.
Right.
George Springer hit a leadoff home run.
Yeah.
So look, those are tough shoes to fill, but maybe Kyle Tucker is the guy. The other now, Sean, the other little fantasy I have. What if on his
going.
Brand new knees?
Oh no,
Yordan Alvarez
leadoff
has. Has wheels like you've never seen. I refuse to believe that Yordan Alvarez doesn't have pent-up speed within him, and he's just been hobbled by these torn patellar tendons however many years he's been struggling through all of this. It's not like he's fat. It's not like he looks unwieldy. I say he comes in running the equivalent. I always forget what a fast 90-foot time is in baseball, but the equivalent of like a 4.240, Sean, and he's your perfect leadoff with power guy.
He does get on base. I will grant him that. That
would but you can't have, you no, can't I, have I, him lumbering around in front of Altuve.
No, it's not where I was going for sure. But
Altuve is going to have a whole bunch of doubles turned into singles if that's the case.
When you know, it's funny when we hear Dusty describe what his idea of a leadoff hitter is. This feels like one of those things. This is year two for Dusty. This might be his last year. He signed a 2-year deal. I don't know if they extended him or not. I have no idea. It doesn't bother me. If they're winning games, I'm cool with Dusty Baker being the manager for as long as he's the manager. I'm cool with that as long as they keep winning. It is interesting, though. Like Dusty comes in late January of last year, I want to say. And let's face it, Seth, he's walking into a team that was 8 outs away from winning the World Series for the second time in 3 years. So probably part of what Dusty was charged with, either directly from upper management or just through common sense, was, okay, I'm here to not rock the boat very much. But there's probably part of Dusty's old schooledness, you know, he's 70-plus years old, that looked at the Springer batting leadoff thing And it was like holding in a sneeze to not move him down to third or fourth or fifth in the lineup. You know what I mean? Just because it's not the traditional thing to do. So when I hear Dusty describing what he views as being important with a leadoff hitter, you know, it sure would be nice. Get a guy who gets on base. Get a guy who has some speed and make the guy who's up after you have to face some fastballs. I'm like, okay. Now Dusty feels like he's been in the house for a year and he can finally do the shag rug and the wallpaper in the colors that he wants at the leadoff spot.
You know who would fit the bill, Sean? Why not go for both power and old school leadoff tendencies?
And?
Somebody who can scoot around. If he can reclaim his 2018 form when he slugged .667, led the team with a 1.067 OPS, and is fast as the day is long, Miles Straw, who in nine games, in nine at-bats, had a .333 batting average. Everybody forgets 2018. Everybody's so quick to say, oh, Straw can't hit very well. Yeah, Straw's going to be batting ninth in this lineup.
Okay.
Remember 2018, my friends.
You laugh, but you know if Bill O'Brien were the general manager of the Astros and he just traded for Miles Straw, just traded Michael Brantley for Miles Straw, that he would be touting his .333 batting average back in 2018.
If Miles Straw had done that against a Bill O'Brien coached team, like if Bill O'Brien were managing the Astros in 2018 and Miles Straw had hit .333 against the Astros, then he would be leading off right now because damn it, I saw the magic that kid's got bottled up inside of him. And again, my requisite apology for making light of anything with Miles Straw. He's got a sense of humor on him too. So he's not going to be a replacement for George Springer in many areas, but at the very least, maybe a little bit of the personality.
He doesn't need to hit 300 or anything. You brought this up during one of the breaks earlier. If Yuli reclaims not even peak Yuli in 2019, man, just be 80% of what you were in the second half of the season in 2019. Seth, they've got seven really good big league hitters in the lineup. And by the way, Martin Maldonado is not a slouch at catcher. As catchers go, he can swing it a little bit. So Straw just needs to just don't be a pitcher. You know what I mean? Like you're going to be batting ninth in all likelihood, eighth or ninth. Just don't be the equivalent of a pitcher back there. Don't bat 112 with an OPS of 286 or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like just be a competent to slightly below competent big league hitter and make your plays in the outfield, and the rest will, you know, the lineup will do the rest for you.
Yeah. I'm excited about Bregman. I think Bregman's going to have an MVP caliber season this year.
Yeah.
Feeling really, really good about Bregman, unless he's gained too much weight. I don't want him to pull one of these things where he realizes like 2 weeks into the season, oh, I bulked up too much. Now I got to slim down.
Right.
Although it's a lot easier to, well, it's not always easy to slim down. You end up just losing. I always get nervous when guys who are really good at what they do change something drastically with their body type. LeBron James did it in the opposite direction. That year that he came back and he looked emaciated, remember? He had gone on a low-carb diet.
Yeah.
And by Christmas, he realized, all right, I got to bulk back up because he looked like a shell of himself out there. Sometimes these extreme changes to the physique don't pan out the way guys are thinking.
Or not even
everything. You know what happens with weight gain, Sean? In the off season, it feels so good because every time you get into the weight room, you're stronger. All the numbers are that, hey, you're just as fast. You're testing your speed and everything, but you can't factor into how fatiguing it is to carry that extra mass around night after night, day after day. And Bregman might get to the point, and hopefully if it is the case, he'll realize it during training camp. Okay. You know, and my legs are not recovering the way I'd like them to. I'm not moving as nimbly at third base as I'd like to. Maybe I can't get around on the ball at the plate as well. And then he just tweaks his diet a little bit and loses some weight.
Carlos Correa is a big story coming out of spring training as well. He met with the media for the first time yesterday, and he revealed right now he wants to be an Astro, but no talks on a contract.
But right now, there's no talks about it. I haven't heard from them since the arbitration was settled. That's where we are right now.
And one more from Correa. If you're looking for a timeline for when he wants to get this done, it's either going to be before the season or after the season, not during the season?
If the Astros want to extend me, you know, I would like to get it done before the season starts. Because once the season starts, man, I feel so good. My body feels so great. And I feel like I'm going to have such a great season that once the season starts, I don't want to be involved and distracted with those conversations.
Carlos Correa betting on himself. Seth, if we're looking at players and their makeup, are they equipped to bet on themselves? I think what you do with Correa is you look at his postseason history. There's no more pressure-packed baseball than October baseball. He's been great in the postseason. When the stakes are the highest, he's been the best. I think Carlos Correa bets on himself, provided he stays healthy. I think he's going to have a really, really big season this year.
You know, we haven't talked about that. We've talked a lot about durability issues and how do you factor all that into it. And I think that with a lot of baseball people, this is what they want to do. They want to look at the postseason. And they really, in their nerdiest of nerd hearts, they want to believe that it's just another data point.
Yes.
It's too small a sample size. You can't figure it. That's what they want to do. But they're just like the rest of us. At some point, you know deep down in your heart somewhere that, yeah, small sample size matters. But, man, some guys just have the ability to rise to the occasion in those moments. And some guys don't. So is it overly weighted? I don't know. But, man, whatever that is, Carlos Correa, he certainly demonstrated that he's not going to shy away from the moment in the postseason. You're never going to have any kind of Clayton Kershaw-type conversations about Carlos Correa. And I think it still matters to enough teams that, man, this guy knows how to turn it on in the postseason, and that's what we're all about. We're not. Does he miss 30 games in the regular season? I don't give a damn. Is he there in the postseason? Hell yeah, give me some of that.
Carlos Correa, probably good at taking the SAT, right? Like, I mean, that's what the postseason is.
You're a C student, but nails the SATs.
Yes, you're a good test taker. Yeah. Carlos Correa is a good test taker. He probably had good ACT and SAT scores, is my guess.
But you're accusing him of cheating. You know what the Ryan brothers did, Rex and Rob Ryan? I think it was Rob Ryan that was the better student, so he took the SATs for both of them.
Oh, really?
Because they're identical twins.
Yeah, yeah. You may not know it to look at them now, but they are identical. All they got to do is change the hairstyle.
I'll have to look that story up. Yeah, and then they admitted to it because, I mean, who cares? they were going to lose out. They were going to lose out on an NFL coaching job at some point. But, yeah, which one of those two would you think would be the better student, Rex or Rob?
Rex, because he became the head coach eventually.
Rob's got a little bit more of a rock style or rock star kind of image to
him,
right?
Like a hippie almost, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but I feel like Rob strikes me as a little bit more intellectual, Seth, like the quiet type.
To be clear, I don't think either of them are getting a 15-20 or anything like that. Or I guess now it's 2,400 is the standard. It used to be 1,600 back in the day, kids, when Seth and I were taking this test. All right. Were the first skits...
Yeah, I try to brag about my SAT scores now, and I get that like, oh, you poor child. Look.
Yeah. Well, good thing you had football to get into Cornell. Right. Were the first skids greased for a Deshaun Watson trade to the Jags? We will explain next. Good to be with you on a Tuesday, Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne. Urban Meyer, head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, had this announcement to make 14 hours ago, so last night. I'm thrilled to be able to announce a very important addition to the Jaguars. We've hired Amy Palsik to lead our communications team. Welcome to Jacksonville, Amy. Amy, of course, the former VP of Communications for the Houston Texans. Not surprisingly, she lands on her feet in Jacksonville. She lands in the division, Seth. So the Texans let Amy Palsik get away to a division foe in the Jacksonville Jaguars. In all seriousness, congratulations to Amy, who is a good friend. And that's good for her. And I would say a much better hire by Urban Meyer than his first hire as head coach of the Jags when he hired a racial-spewing strength coach. Amy, a much better hire than Chris Doyle, the strength coach.
So a lot of people are wondering, hey, Deshaun likes Amy Palsik. They've worked together a lot. Is this somehow an indication that Urban Meyer is going to make a push for Deshaun Watson? I'd have a hard time making that leap. I mean, this is the NFL. People go and they get jobs elsewhere. Like, Deshaun Watson is probably fans of various other ex-employees of the Texans that he's not going to just – We can't start playing that game of, wow, this person he likes is now employed by only 31 other teams.
Sure we can. He liked the tweet about this yesterday.
Maybe, Maybe I'm wrong about it. Yeah, maybe I'm completely wrong. Yeah, him liking the tweet, that's what I have an issue with is, okay, taking that and taking it to mean, oh, wow, Deshaun probably wants to go to Jacksonville. Because, yeah, he's liking some good news of a friend of his.
Right.
It'd be more newsworthy if he didn't like the tweet.
Yeah.
If it was, oh, wow, maybe he's not, maybe he doesn't actually think all that highly of Amy Palsik. Now, is it one less barrier, perhaps? Or does it somehow make it a little bit easier that if Deshaun Watson were to have a chat with Urban Meyer, that maybe he could also have a chat with Amy Palsik? Sure, maybe. I just don't think that Urban Meyer probably went into it thinking, I got to get Amy Palsik on the squad because that's my avenue to getting Deshaun Watson.
No, she's very capable at her job, so I'm sure that's why. And look, I teased that into this segment. Like, with the first skids greased, I was being a little hyperbolic and kind of jokey about the whole thing. Now, that said, we know that Urban Meyer likes Deshaun Watson. We know that Urban Meyer feels like we cannot miss on this decision at quarterback. And it was more in reference to questions about Trevor Lawrence. But the urgency is there regardless of who the quarterback is. Urban Meyer knows that he's only going to go as far as the quality of his quarterback play is in the NFL. He's not a dummy. So he knows that either they're going to have to coach up Trevor Lawrence or they're going to have to use that pick to go get somebody who's a sure thing like Deshaun Watson. I'll say this, Seth, that if things do heat up between the Texans and the Jags, I don't expect that they will, but let's pretend for a second, because a Trevor Lawrence deal is one of the things that might be able to salvage this whole thing if you're the Houston Texans. It would then be logical that Deshaun Watson, who is, again, very good friends with Amy Palsik, that would at least be a resource in the building there for him to call up and say, okay, tell me what it's like there. Give me the lay of the land in the building there. I know that it's not a great football team, but again, he's in all likelihood not going to be going to a great football team. You know what I mean? When people go, what's the Jags? That's kind of far-fetched. They were 1-15 last year. Yeah, they were 1-15 last year in no small part because their quarterback play stunk. And oh, by the way, they've got way more, even after a Deshaun trade, they've got way more draft capital than certainly the Texans do or any of these other teams that would trade for Deshaun would have. Because they can just give up the first overall pick and maybe a little extra and get that deal done, I would think.
They've got a ton of draft capital. They've got a ton of picks, a ton of cap space. And never forget this, that Urban Meyer, one of his strengths as a coach is that he is a hell of a recruiter. And if what Deshaun is looking for is some of that old-time college feel, where it's not going to feel like Dabo Swinney. I don't think Deshaun's under any illusions that Urban Meyer is going to be anything like Dabo Swinney. But when it comes to installing a culture that's all about winning and achieving and all this other stuff, I think Urban can make a pretty good pitch to Deshaun. And you've pointed this out a bunch of times, Sean, and kind of brought me around on it. When it comes to actual star power, earning power for an athlete, I don't think market size hardly matters at all anymore. Pat Mahomes is in Kansas City. Kansas City is not an awesome market to make a bunch of money as an endorser unless you're a nationwide star like Pat Mahomes.
Yeah.
So I don't think it being in Jacksonville, I lived in Jacksonville for a total of like 7 years in my life. It's a nice place to live, especially if you're out. I think Deshaun can afford a place out at the beach.
Mm.
It's a really nice beach to live at. So I think that Jacksonville might be more appetizing for Deshaun than people realize. The other thing that people will bring up is, hey, David Mulligetta was Jalen Ramsey's agent, and he got Jalen Ramsey the hell out of Jacksonville. Yeah, that was a Jacksonville team whose president was Tom Coughlin,
that's right,
whose head coach was Doug Marrone. It was a completely different culture. It was a completely different environment. And I think the owner there is generally viewed as a guy that is going to invest a lot of resources, is going to let the owner, let the coach do what he wants to do. I think it's going to be a different feel perhaps for David Mulligetta and Deshaun Watson than it was when Jalen Ramsey was there.
Yeah, as far as the marketing goes, I think you pointed this out, Seth, the last time we had this conversation. Gardner Minshew had a fantasy football endorsement last year. And
yeah,
he was playing for Jacksonville and not playing well for Jacksonville.
One of our listeners brought that up.
Okay, yeah.
Gardner Minshew had quite a few national things going on just because, hey, I'm quirky Gardner Minshew. I wear short denim shorts. I'm all, you know,
right.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. So
somebody, go ahead, Sean.
No, go ahead.
Somebody, I just wanted to bring this up because we were talking about Carlos Correa in the postseason and how good he's been. And one of our texters said, hey, Carlos Correa hasn't been great every postseason series, which I don't think I said that he was great every postseason series, but he's certainly demonstrated to be his great moments have been some all-time great moments, including this last, I mean, this last postseason was just absolutely absurd. The really remarkable thing is his consistency in the postseason, because in 11 series since 2017, he's only had one bad series, and it was the 2019 ALDS. That was it. Every other time, he's had an OPS above 700 in 10 out of 11 series in the postseason, which is remarkably consistent. Average OPS is about a 750. So I'm saying if you're over 700, then at the very least you had about an average postseason, and it's harder to do that in the postseason than it is in the regular season, better pitchers, all that stuff. So, yes, he's had those really high highs, but he's also been remarkably consistent. I think that other teams, when they're looking at their free agents, look at that, and that starts to be a sample size. That starts to be that's something where you can say, wow, look, you don't want to make too much of any one individual postseason or any one incredible moment, but when you stretch it out over 11 postseason series and he's been incredibly consistent while peppering in some brilliant performances, I think that's something the analytics type say it's significant.
Yeah, and if we're going to go recency, Seth, the three series they played in last year, OPS of 1.625 in the short series against the Twins, OPS of 1.754 in the ALDS against the Oakland A's, and then a very respectable 829 OPS in the seven-game series against the Tampa Bay Rays. Yeah, I think the point we were saying is he's generally a good postseason player. Yep. You play in this many series, you're going to have a down one or two. He's got an OPS of 869 in the postseason going against the best teams in baseball.
It's the argument that always drives me wild when somebody says, okay, so somebody says Correa has not been great in every postseason. Okay, you know who wasn't great in every postseason? Michael Jordan. Okay, is that the check against him? Michael Jordan wasn't great in every postseason. So is he somehow less of a basketball player because of that?
Right.
Nobody is ever batting 1,000 in any of these things year after year every single time.
He's 25 years old. Seth, I almost have the opposite reaction as to what you and I had earlier with, we were talking about Teddy Bridgewater and Malcolm Butler earlier, and we were going, man, like Malcolm Butler going, wow, he's 31 already. God, I can't believe he's already 31. Correa, it's almost the opposite. Like, I look at his, you know, the back of his baseball card here on baseballreference.com, and I'm like, God, he was only 25 in last year's postseason? Like, he's still really, really young for the amount of experience that that guy's had. Like, how many guys have had 266 plate appearances in the postseason by the age of 25? The list has got to be microscopic.
What if the Texans had had some better postseason runs and Will Fuller had been magnificent in those postseason runs? How would we be thinking of Will Fuller right now? Because there are some correlations there between Correa and Will Fuller. You know, when healthy, they're astoundingly good. It's just that with the Astros, Correa's had the opportunity to be awesome in the playoffs and in those moments, and you remember those and you can see it. Whereas with Fuller, and Hopkins was the same way, banged up and just kind of dragging themselves into the postseason. I feel like with Fuller, if the Texans had made some deep playoff runs and Fuller had been awesome, I'd be feeling completely different about it right now.
I'm glad you added that last part. And Fuller had been awesome.
If he
had moments there.
If they won a couple of divisional games even, if they made it to a championship game because Fuller went off for three touchdowns.
Right.
If they made it to a Super Bowl but lost, but Fuller was brilliant in the Super Bowl loss, I would start thinking more about, okay, you know what, I can handle the fact that Fuller's banged up a lot because, my gosh, look at him in the postseason.
I would be willing to guarantee you that we would not be having the conversation we're about to have in the next segment about the franchise tag and Will Fuller. He would probably have a deal done already. Speaking of that, teams can start using the franchise tag today. What does Nick Caserio's history with the Patriots tell us about the chances of Will Fuller getting a tag? We'll run through it next. Today is the first day that NFL teams can franchise tag their free agents for this offseason. Here's Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network with a preview of the headliners for the franchise tag season.
Let's start, yes, with Dak Prescott. You mentioned, of course, a franchise tag player last year. Expect him to be franchise tagged again for the second straight year. $37.7 million is the tag, except if the Cowboys are able to do a long-term deal. And my understanding, and this is something I reported along with Tom Pelissero during the Super Bowl week, is the Cowboys do want to work out a long-term deal with Prescott before they have to tag him. They are confident in his recovery to do that. Another player we're going to be talking about, Chris Godwin, the Buccaneers' star receiver. Do not expect him to go anywhere. Obviously going to try to work out a long-term deal with him. If they cannot get something done, they are expected to tag him as well. And then finally, Kenny Golladay, the Detroit Lions star receiver, another one of the big-time group of young receivers who could potentially be available. I would be very surprised if he's actually available. Another strong franchise tag candidate. I know they had talks last year about a long-term extension. Did not happen. I'm going to try again this year, but expect him to be tagged if they don't get a deal.
All right, so that's Ian Rappaport, Chris Godwin, Kenny Golladay, two of the bigger receiver names on the market. Will Fuller, Seth, picked a really bad time to get a PED suspension. It's a pretty robust market for wide receivers, and Fuller is a guy who, look, was on his way to having a fully healthy season. He was healthy for 11 games, and now it's completely called into question as to why or how he stayed so healthy this year. And we'll talk about...
And also, let me point that out, too, that it's people are acting like because he was healthy for 11 games that somehow he was healthy all season long. I don't know if the PEDs had anything to do with him being healthy, but I know there are five more opportunities, damn near a full third of the season, in which we didn't even get to see if he could have stayed healthy.
Right.
So it's yet another season in which he didn't play all the games. And it wasn't for health reasons specifically, but he couldn't even prove that he was healthy for 16 games this year.
So Fuller is the only real candidate to be franchise tagged for the Texans. The Texans don't have a lot of great players entering free agency. They don't have a lot of great players, period, but they don't have a lot of great players entering free agency. Fuller is a worthwhile debate and discussion as to whether or not you should franchise tag him. My feeling is you do franchise tag him. The worst case scenario is you get stuck with Will Fuller on a franchise tag. It's not the worst thing in the world. Best case is he's a reason why Deshaun Watson might want to get back into the fold, or you use him as part of a trade package with Deshaun Watson to kind of sweeten the package and get more draft assets or more assets, period, from a potential trade partner. Seth, I went and looked at the history of the Patriots with the franchise tag with Nick Caserio in the building there. That's really all we have to go on at this point with Nick Caserio is, okay, what did the Patriots do while he was there? And then speculate as to whether or not he espouses similar philosophies as Bill Belichick might have running personnel for the Patriots. So for what it's worth, the Patriots, during an 11-season stretch from 2002 through 2012, the Patriots used the franchise tag 8 times in 11 years. Now, this is nearly a decade ago.
Yeah.
But they used it 8 times in 11 years. The biggest names that got franchise tagged, there was a stretch of 4 straight years at the back end of that decade, 09 through 2012. Matt Cassel, who was tagged and then traded, Vince Wilfork, Logan Mankins, Wes Welker, all franchise tagged by the New England Patriots. Then they went a period from 13 through 19 where they only used it 1 time. They used it on Steven Gostkowski in 2015, a kicker. So really, it's like they barely used it for about another 7 years. Then they used it on Joe Thuney this past year, the guard. They used it on him in 2020. So they've used it far more sporadically under the new CBA,
yeah,
with the rookie deals than they did the previous decade. So recently here, really not much evidence of the Patriots deploying the franchise tag. I don't know what to read into that with Fuller, you know, other than I would do it if I were them. I would use it just to hang on to him as an asset to use.
Yeah, and I've come around on this, and I think the biggest reason I'm following it closely right now is because I'm not going to be distraught if they don't use it on Will Fuller. His injury history just scares me. And if it ends up being that you can't sign a reasonable free agent or redo somebody that you want to keep for a long term because you've got this money allocated to Fuller, then I'm not really a fan of that. However, if you're trying to get Deshaun Watson back into the fold, which needs to be your number one priority, if you think that's still even possible, then keeping Will Fuller around is part of that. So I kind of look at it as a barometer for what might happen. If they don't franchise tag Will Fuller or sign him to an extension before March 13th, that's the last date you can use the franchise tag, then I'm going to assume that they are pretty pessimistic about re-signing Deshaun or bringing Deshaun Watson back in.
That's
either that or they're completely oblivious. It's one of those two things. Both things can be true, by the way.
Well, Seth,
they could be completely oblivious no matter what happens with Deshaun Watson.
A normal operating franchise, if this were the situation, well, first of all, a normal operating franchise would not be sideways with their quarterback right now. They wouldn't have to worry about pitching their quarterback who's on a 5-year contract right now on why he should still be with the team. So just taking a step back there. But if they were operating in a way where this is a situation they're in with Deshaun Watson, they need to do as many things as they can. If their goal is to get Deshaun Watson back in the building, then they need to do as many things that they think align with the best for Deshaun Watson and what's best for the Texans, too. You always have to do what's best for the organization as well. Having Deshaun Watson is what's best for this organization. Seth, this offseason, though, has been a tale of a team that's saying one thing, and then all the things that are happening are the total opposite of that. You know what I mean? It feels like, yeah, we want Deshaun Watson back, and then they hired David Culley is the next head coach. Oh, yeah, we want Deshaun Watson back. Then they do this end around with Nick Caserio as the GM where they don't keep Deshaun, just make a friendly phone call to him and say, hey, here's what we're doing. Hey, we want Deshaun Watson back. Jamie Roots quits. You know, like,
is there any – now, Jamie Roots, like the whole Jamie Roots thing is – that's on the business side of the operation. I look at Jamie Roots as an indicator that the culture is pretty messed up and that people are fleeing the building. Yeah. I don't know how much that actually affects Deshaun Watson.
No, but it's symbolic, though.
Yeah, it's symbolic. I don't think Deshaun Watson, who, by the way, yeah, Deshaun's friends with Amy Palsik, and Jamie Roots claimed responsibility for hiring Amy Palsik.
Good point.
So I don't – who knows how he feels about that. But as far as – As far as the things the Texans are doing to try to retain Deshaun Watson, do you think in their mind they think that David Culley was actually a move that would entice Deshaun Watson?
Yes.
As opposed to, say, maybe, like, I don't know, interviewing Robert Saleh? Simple little things like actual people that people were talking about as head coaches, interviewing some of them. I don't know.
Right. Or, you know, maybe allowing Eric Bieniemy to get to the same stage of the process as David Culley. You know, that kind of thing. Yes, I do. I'll answer that affirmatively. Yes, I think that they think David Culley is a selling point to Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. That's what makes me nervous, is that because I feel like they're looking at things on very surface level. I would worry. This is what I would worry about. I would worry that the Texans are thinking something like, well, David Culley is a black head coach, and boy, that might really appeal to Deshaun Watson, and he's positive thinking. That's what I would worry. Now, maybe that's not the truth, because what that does is, honestly, it makes the situation a whole lot simpler than it actually is, and it would be ignoring Deshaun's very real objections to everything else going on the football side of the operation. That's what I would worry about.
Yeah.
And even then, even if it's just for the positive, I would worry that they hired David Culley because they thought he's a positive influence. And hey, he's going to bring a positive attitude over there, because I think Deshaun Watson wants, a more positive environment than Bill O'Brien. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he needs a guy that's just sparking happy, happy, joy all the time and doesn't actually know football. I think Deshaun Watson wants competent football people in control, and it's as simple as that.
Yeah, I think 100%. I don't think Deshaun is a guy who minds being coached hard.
You know, not at all.
Right? Maybe he didn't like the overall dark cloud that O'Brien brought to the organization when he got so much power. But as far as the head coach goes, and that's really all David Culley is going to be, is the head coach of this football team. My sense with Deshaun is that he didn't mind Bill O'Brien, the head coach. It was Bill O'Brien, the franchise destructor, that Deshaun Watson probably had more issues with than Bill. Now, I mean, he may have had issues with Bill O'Brien and play calling and play selection and all those things. But as far as style goes, social style, management style, I don't know that Deshaun is a guy. He's not Carson Wentz. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think Deshaun's a guy who bristles at being told bad news about things he needs to do better and whatnot.
He's not Jay Cutler.
Right.
He's not, I don't know, think of any, he's not, who's the old one with the mustache and the Colts there? What's his name?
The old one with the mustache.
He was the worst. He was just so angry all the time.
And Jeff George?
Jeff George, yeah, Jeff George. No, Jeff George. He's not one of those types of guys. He's the opposite.
How did I get that from just with the mustache?
The mustache and the grumpy attitude and it was the Colts and the Raiders, right?
Colts, Raiders, Redskins, Vikings. He turned into a giant Falcons. Remember he got into a shouting match with June Jones on the sideline? Yeah, he was.
I wonder what he's up to right now.
Probably 350 pounds.
Why? He wasn't. No, I bet he's still smoking cigarettes.
You think?
He's maintaining his smell. He had one of the better mullets in NFL history. He had one of the most distinctive 80s looks because he had a mullet. He had a mustache. He looked like a combination of somebody that could be in a, like almost in Hall & Oates is a lesser band member from Hall & Oates.
He was your quintessential first overall pick in a draft in 1990. Little rat tail mullet hanging out of the helmet. And by the way, kids, if you want to go see what a smooth release looks like, I'll say this about Jeff George. Nobody threw a smoother football than Jeff George, man.
Well, he's an incredible arm talent.
He did. Yeah. His arm talent was amazing. Might have been the best I've ever seen. It was incredible, but he was a head case, man. He was a nut job. But back to Deshaun Watson. Speaking of sane quarterbacks, back to Deshaun Watson. Yeah, Seth, I guess if David Culley is viewed as a selling point for Deshaun Watson, which I do think that they view that, it's three reasons. He's a black head coach. He's a cheery head coach. And Deshaun hung out with him at the Pro Bowl a couple of years ago and seemed to like the guy.
Stabbing in the dark. Like, okay, boy, he liked him at the Pro Bowl.
Right.
I said Senior Bowl at the Pro. Deshaun was not playing at the Senior Bowl. No. He liked him at the Pro Bowl. So, boy, maybe we got a shot here. Yeah, it feels like you're fumbling in the dark.
Yeah.
Or it feels like me the first time I tried to unhook a bra.
Yes.
I had no idea what was going to happen. I had no reason to believe it was going to go well. I was just hoping that it would.
Right.
And ultimately, everybody was disappointed.
And like this Deshaun standoff, it's taking weeks to accomplish. You're still fumbling.
I didn't know what I was
going to
do. This is the big thing. I didn't know what I was going to do if I succeeded. I was almost hoping that I wouldn't succeed because I was so unprepared for the moment. Yeah.
All right. Let's close on a lighter note. Alex Bregman in the Astros. The Astros spring training first team workout yesterday. Alex Bregman. He got back into the workout room this offseason after the short season. He explained why to the media.
I was super weak and fragile and not only physically, mentally, and I just felt weak all around. So told myself at the beginning of the offseason that I took the last 6 months off, so there's no time off now. It's time to get after it. And looked forward to getting in the gym right away and getting stronger, feeling back in my legs, feeling strong and stable and able to hold positions in my swing. Mechanically, I was flying. My front side was flying out. I wasn't using my hands how I had in the past. And it's good to feel strong again, good to feel back to being myself, and I'm looking forward to playing a great 162 games schedule.
Seth, he sounds like he's recovering from paralysis.
And he sounds like he sounds disgusted with himself, but in a very matter-of-fact way.
Yes.
There's something about last year where I think sometimes we forget, because of all of the scandal stuff and everything and all that mayhem and because of the weirdness of COVID, we forget that the Astros were coming off also of the grind of two World Series appearances in three seasons and three deep playoff runs in a row. And I think the physical toll that can take on a team. You've seen it with Altuve just trying to play through injuries and how banged up he was in 2019 and just, or 2018 and then going on into 2019, that there were so many things working against the Astros that in hindsight we should have expected there to be that lull that they started off with in 2020. And I think it might end up really being a silver lining that all of that turmoil happened in that shortened season, and that the Astros were able to go on a deep playoff run and still come out of the season feeling relatively fresh, still playing less than 162 games,
yeah,
as opposed to previously when you played 162 games and then stacked on three playoff series on top of it. This might be just what the doctor ordered in a lot of respects. And that's why Bregman, at the end of a deep playoff run, could just get right back to work because he still felt fresh. So I'm excited about that part of it. Without being overly dramatic about any of the scandal stuff or any of that, it feels like a genuine fresh start right now.
It does, and Bregman corroborates what you're saying. Seth said the team's had a great offseason so far.
We added some great bullpen pieces to go along with the great group of guys that we already have. That's going to be one of our big strengths, I think. And then just, offensively, we're going to be really, really good. I'm looking forward to it, and can't wait to get the big man back.
The big man is Yordan Alvarez, of course. And Seth, I didn't get to see that Zoom call, but you hear Alex Bregman talk enough. I bet he had a little smirk on his face when he paused and kind of said, offensively, we're going to be really, really good. You know what I mean? They are going to be really, really good offensively. This is, even without Springer, this is still a really exciting lineup. I'm pumped for baseball season, man.
There's like the big obvious X factors, which are Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez. Yordan, the health of his knees, how much can he stay out there? Kyle Tucker with a little bit of added muscle and the promising season he had last year. The huge one, and like I think the fan favorite X factor would have to be Yuli. That if Yuli can reclaim a little bit of what he had 2 years ago at an advanced age, like we all know what it is. He's old and he's only got so many good seasons left in him. But he could be the one thing that takes this from being a pretty damn good lineup to Yuli being what he was 2 years ago. Then all of a sudden, you've got seven studs out there.
Yep.
You've got seven really scary spots in that lineup.
Seth? Antibodies to you, my friend. It was fun.
Antibodies to you. Don't take any wooden nickels, anything else your grandparents might have said to you back then.
You got that right. No wooden nickels, kids. All right, we're done. We're out of time. In the Loop is up next. John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig, Ben Gary, nice job today. All of you, nice job tuning in. We appreciate that. Hope to have you back tomorrow, 6 a.m., bright and early. We'll see you then. Have a great day, everybody.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.